Hi guys, and welcome back to the Worcestershire podcast, where our motto is, if attempted murder is a crime, then attempted comedy is a podcast. We're the Worst Sisters. I'm Sadie.
I'm Suna.
And I'm Arzon.
And this week we're back for another episode of Whisperia Lane, where we'll be covering seasons 1, episodes 7 and 8 of Desperate Housewives. Do you guys want to kick into it with a little recap of season 1, episode 7 and 8?
Season 1, episode 7 is called Anything You Can Do, and the main thing we're getting out of this episode is that everyone is competing against each other. So Susan is competing for like Mike's affection for some random like house guest. Bree is competing against Rex for who's going to be the better parent. Gabby is competing against Danielle for John's affections as well. And Lynette is competing with the Bree Vanderkamps and the Tom Scarvos of the world.
Episode 8 is called Guilty. And this one, as the name would suggest, is all about people dealing with their guilt. So all of the housewives are dealing with something. A big event that happens in episode 7 is Mama Solis gets run over. So we see different people dealing with that guilt in different ways. So Gabby's feeling guilty because her affair ultimately led to it. Bree is feeling guilty because her son caused it. Andrew's not feeling guilty at all, and Bree is dealing with the guilt of that. And Lynette's dealing with the guilt of whether she's a good mum or not. So They're all guilty in these episodes.
Oh, I can hear the thunder now. That was loud.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's so loud.
All right, so you want to kick us off with Susan?
Yeah, so Susan's like getting ready. She's super excited about her date with Mike. She goes over to his house, knocks on his door, and there's a woman in the house with the name of Kendra.
Yeah, but before she even gets there, though, don't you love how she was like trying to brag to Edie that she had a date with Mike?
Yeah.
She wears her cutest little dress and she's like, oh, hi, Edie. You know, I've got a date with Mike, and just like generally bragging. But Edie has like the best comeback ever, which I thought was so good, where she's like, oh, Susan, you look so pretty. I didn't recognize you.
I know.
But anyway,
What's even better than that, though, is like her comeback when Susan has to leave.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. This her showing off to Edie is so good because of what happens next. I loved it.
So her and her her full 2000s get up, goes over to knock on Mike's door, feeling like great because she just bested Edie. She knocks on the door and Mike answers, and he's like, oh, sorry, I'm going to have to cancel. I've got an uninvited guest. Who is this uninvited guest? A very hot woman called Kendra.
Yeah.
So she has like a bit of an awkward interaction with Mike at the door. And then she's going to have an even bigger awkward interaction with Edie as she's trying to hide behind her big envelope of a bag. She walks back.
And Edie doesn't miss a beat, though. And she's like, how was your hot date?
Yeah, I know. And when Susan's like, oh, it had to be delayed, she's like, why? Is it because of the hot girl with a suitcase just over there?
Yeah. Oh, Edie.
I know. Yeah, I was going to say, it's even funnier because she's like, oh, how devastating that must be for you, FYI.
Yeah, so after this little interaction that she has with Mike, she sort of becomes obsessed, I guess. And she starts to follow Mike around and, like, try and catch him out on whatever he's supposedly doing. He ends up going to an open house with this Kendra, and you can see them talking. And he's saying to Kendra about, like, we're going to go to a bar. I forgot the name of the bar. Do you guys have that?
Some dude ranch thing. I don't know.
Yeah. Like a ranch style bar, and that's the last
Saddle
place.
Ranch.
Saddle Ranch.
Oh no! Wait, I wrote in my notes. I literally wrote they're going to the Saddle Ranch or Saddle Horse or something.
I wrote Saddle Ranch, so it must be Saddle Ranch.
I remembered ranch style, so yeah. Let's go with a combination of those three and make it Saddle Ranch and be done with it.
But the interesting thing about this is she's not alone. She's joined forces with Edie. So Edie's the one that overheard Mike telling Kendra they're going to the Saddle Ranch. And she goes off and tells Susan that they're sleeping together and I just want you to know. And so she convinces Susan to go along to the Saddle Ranch with her. And, like, one of my favorite things when Susan's like to Edie, why are you helping me? Edie's like, because I'm rooting for you to win because then it'll be easier for me to for me to steal Mike from you than her.
The thing that I hate so much about this is that Susan, of course, she's a quirky girl, and when she gets caught out for spying on Mike with Edie, okay, so Edie's on this bull having the time of her life, right? She's living her best life, and she's like to Mike, I'm not here spying on you. I'm here to ride the bull, and takes like his hat or something or other, Edie's hat, and puts it on. And so now she's forced to pretend she wants to ride a bull, but she wants to show off a little bit, right? Because she's trying to show up the hot friend. So she walks up, she's like unbuttoning her shirt. She's like, woohoo, cowgirl, whatever. And clumsy, goofy, silly Susan just throws her hat onto the controls for the riding bull thing and gets smacked straight in the face with a whole ass bull before she even gets on.
I know. She doesn't even make it on the bull.
I know. Like, yeah, exactly. But also my thing is, like, so Mike does go to get her some ice and they're sitting at the table and Kendra gives her a cold beer to put on her cheek, whatever. But do the owners of this establishment not care that, like, some woman got bashed in the face by a bull? Like, they're all just letting her sit there and they're just like, yeah, cool, have a beer.
Yeah.
There's got to be, like, some sort of disclaimer somewhere for things like that.
Yeah, but you think they still have, like, someone medically trained on stuff. They might give her the ice without asking, like, you know, might call a doctor.
So Mike goes to get the ice and Kendra and Susan sort of have a heart-to-heart. And Kendra heavily implies that Mike is not who he says he is, and for Susan to ask him specifically about why he came to Wisteria Lane.
Yeah, she says it's a hell of a story. But this also ties back to a little bit of a scene that we haven't talked about yet, where we see Kendra talking to Mike about why she's there. And she seems to be involved in whatever the thing he's searching for is. So she says to him that he's been there for 6 weeks and he hasn't turned up a lot. And it turns out that guy that Mike's working for is her dad. And Kendra wants her father back. And she wants him to basically tell her dad that he didn't find anything and there's nothing over here in Wisteria Lane. She just wants her dad back. And she does kind of threaten him a little bit by saying, what happens when your girlfriend finds out you're not just a sweet neighborhood plumber?
Yeah, exactly.
And so I think this is Kendra putting in that work. The chat that she had with Mike already, she's now putting the seeds of doubt into Susan to try and get her to find out what he's up to so that he can leave.
Yeah.
Or he can stop working on whatever it is that's occupying her dad's time.
Susan goes back over to Mike's in the next episode because they're going to reorganize their date. So they're going to the Germani Vineyard and, you know, they've booked a wine tasting, but they're also going to book a hotel room. You know, very romantic. It's like, I don't know, I feel like a very intense first date, but whatever.
But they've been trying to date for 6 weeks.
Yeah, but like, it's still a first date. And I'd like to circle back to this point. It is their first date. And I want everyone to remember this when I speak about something later on. Everyone, keep in mind, it is their first date.
Okay? I'm so triggered.
I literally keep forgetting that I haven't actually been on a date yet.
I know. They've kissed one time and went to one dinner party, and this is what they're like.
He's seen her naked lying in a bush.
So that's automatically third date territory.
Exactly.
I don't care. There is no reason for even after your third date to be acting this psycho. Both of them. Literally both of them. They're so dumb, they deserve each other. So
I want to hear Artem's take on this.
Okay. So after they've booked their really extravagant first date, which, you know, is a weekend away basically, Susan goes digging through Mike's cupboards for treats to feed Bongo one because, you know, last time she tried to kill him, so now she has to be nice. So she finds that there's like a bunch of money and guns and stuff in his like pantry cupboard, which I said from episode one, he shouldn't be having them there. They should be somewhere upstairs anyway. And Susan makes an excuse to be in the house tomorrow to let Mike's tile guy in because he's doing work around the house, whatever. Immediately, the second he leaves, she starts snooping through his shit again. Of course, silly, clumsy Susan goes upstairs and literally falls through the fucking floor and is holding on for dear life and begging this dog to save her. Which obviously isn't going to happen. Bongo just brings her a dead bird because he's the best.
Yeah.
And Mike, Susan runs upstairs with all of this cash and guns just in her shirt for no reason. Like, and then she drops it in the sink.
Yeah, because she freaked out because the guy came back and knocked on the door. Like, she could have done anything.
I know. Literally.
Run under the couch and talk to him.
And then jumps through some rotten floorboards. Mike is like, ha ha ha, so cute. This bitch broke my floor. And helps her out of the hole that she's literally dug herself in. and sees the cash there. And he's like, get the hell out of my house. And she's kind of just like, oh, okay. You think it's weird that I touched all of your money and personal belongings and you want me out of this house? It's worse because later on she comes over to apologize and pay for the floor, but also is our date off? Like, and Mike's like, yes, you snipped through all of my shit, so that's a deal breaker for me. And immediately she's like, so are you a drug dealer? What's going on in your life? You have this whole part of your life that's walled off. And he's like, I'm a good guy, Susan. You should know that by now. And I'm just thinking, you guys haven't even been on one date. Like, you should not trust him if you think he's being shady. And you should not expect her to know you're a good guy if she's like, I don't know. And if you have all that money in your house, you shouldn't just be letting it sitting in your cupboard willy-nilly when there's bitches coming through. Like, everything that is wrong with these people, literally everything. Yeah.
I know. Can I, on that point that you raised, can I draw your attention to the conversation that Susan has with Julie about the money?
Yes.
When, Susan goes to find, when Susan finds the money and before she goes back the next day to snoop some more, she's telling Julie, who is continuing to be her parent, about it and what she should do. And she does run through the scenarios of he could be a hitman for the mob. And Julie's like, well, why are you going away with him for then? And Susan's like, because I never get out of the house.
Yeah, exactly. Just say you're thirsty and move on. Say you're not actually concerned and you're just nosy and move on.
Yeah, like, because if you were really nosy, you wouldn't go. Like, if you were really concerned, you wouldn't go, right?
Exactly, like, exactly.
You can't be that desperate for a man, surely. So obviously she's not concerned.
No, she's not. And then later on, after they're like, she's like, oh, well, then if you can't trust me, maybe we shouldn't see each other. And he's like, yeah, okay. And she's shocked. Yeah. They then stare at each other across the street through their kitchen windows for a while she drinks.
She did say to him, like, it's your loss.
Is it, like, though?
What loss?
Is it, though? Like, you haven't even been on a date with her and you've, like, had to rescue her 8 times out of a naked bush and you've also had to, like, refix your floor that she's come crashing down through. She's knocked herself in the face with a bull. What are you missing out on, hospital bills?
Knocked herself in the face with a bull.
The other thing that Susan was really funny about this episode is when she is hanging through Mike's ceiling and he comes home and he's like, Susan, he's calling out, and she's like, I'm upstairs, sort of.
Yeah. Yeah. After they're done staring at each other through the windows, he eventually, like, is sitting and staring at this photo of her once he's done staring at her face and realizes he can't live without her. So he walks over there, knocks on her door, and he's like, I know you have all these questions and you can answer anything. I just can't lose you, Susan. And again, I'd like to remind you guys, they haven't even been on one date. And she's like, you've just answered everything I need to know. And then they make out. Like, did he answer everything? He answered nothing. Where did that money come from? Why does he have a gun? What's the story? Why did Kendra warn you? Where are all these questions, Susan?
Yeah, well, I guess the thing that she means here, though, is that she trusts him. The fact that he was willing to tell her is all she needs to know. But she's an idiot, because I would be like, okay, well then, here's my list of questions. Moving on to Lynette. So Lynette, as we kind of left her last time, had started taking the ADD medication, and it is working a treat for her. So when we first see Lynette, her house is spotless. She's, like, walking around cleaning things with a Q-tip, like, she's living the dream. She's the housewife. And then Tom comes in and he's like, God. Hey, I've got an idea. I want to pitch something to my bosses, but, like, I want you to throw me a formal dinner in 2 days so that I can do it and look like a big man. And
let me clarify, sorry, something quickly. No, he didn't say, I have an idea. He said, I invited them.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. So Lynette's like, oh, well, I can't, you know, that's not much notice and all of that stuff. So Tom's like, well, Brie Vandekamp does that sort of thing all the time and I didn't think it was going to be a big deal. So
what a bitch.
You know, first of all, makes Lynette feel like shit for that. And then second of all, she's like, well, I used to be in this game. Why don't you, like, run your ideas past me and I'll give you some, you know, feedback or whatever. And he's like, nah, I'm all good. Like,
don't, yeah, I know. And also, like, Brie Vandekamp doesn't have 4 children under the age of, like, 3 running amok in her house with a husband that doesn't help her.
Yeah, exactly. She was more forgiving than I would have been. Agrees to throw him a dinner party, but she's got a problem. She's out of the pills. So she's trying her best to kind of get some new pills. She goes and meets Jordana, who was the one that put her onto the ADD medication in the first place, but She doesn't have any to spare. She doesn't have a square to spare.
Oh my God, I knew you were going to say that.
And Lynette's like, well, come Girl Scout cookie time, don't bother bringing around your little Tina because I won't be home. So
that's so rude. Happening. Never be mean to a Tina.
I know. Shit's happening in the ADD mum medication gang. So
I know.
Things are going down.
It really so is. So
the next thing Lynette does is she goes over to little Timmy's for a play date. And she's like,
I hear he's medicated.
I hear Timmy's medicated. And then I guess Timmy's mum is like, yeah, he is. So she excuses herself to the bathroom into, what is it, medicine cabinet.
Yeah.
And she steals some of Timmy's medicine. But because she doesn't want to be doing this too often, she doesn't want to be sinking to those depths anytime soon, she takes a whole heap.
My gosh, she basically takes the whole bottle. Anyway, she's like, done this dinner and everything's going really well. She makes the cutest little, like, fruit tartlets for dessert. And she's, like, slaying life right now. And Tom goes to pitch his idea for this company called, like, Spotless Scrub or whatever. And he's like, oh, this really unique idea. They lack visibility, so let's, like, advertise them. And I know we're in advertising, so it works.
And I know, his brilliant idea was literally advertising.
I know. And he's like, okay, well, we should put it on shopping carts. And then Lynette is like, oh, well, you know, you should put it in, like, dry cleaning bags. No one else does that. People will notice it. And the people that he's pitching to love the idea. They're like, this is brilliant. Yeah. Like, we need to do this. It can be taken really well. And they're all, like, frothing the idea, basically. But afterwards, Tom is, like, pissed at her because it's making his ideas look bad. And he basically wanted her to just have her input in the dinner and not his career, basically. And he's going off at her, like, you know, your career was better than mine before we had kids and you never let me forget it. Lynette kind of has a breakdown at this point, and she's like, no, it's not fair because I'm always competing with everyone. Like, everyone used to compete with me, but now I'm competing with the Brie Vandercamps of the world, and you, like, basically shoot on me all the time, and I'm a terrible mum. And he very angrily tells her, I happen to think you're a fantastic mother, and this dinner was fantastic as well. And I don't know, I just hated it because Tom's the biggest douchebag. But
it's also condescending, right? It's also condescending.
Yes.
Because, like, I feel like he's subtly trying to put her in her place as this housewife that she doesn't really want to do, but she's doing it because that's what he wants.
Yes.
And he keeps trying to shove her in that hole. Like, he could at least, he knows how into this stuff is, how much she loved work. He could at least, like, involve her. And yeah. She's got great ideas. It's not like he's doing her a favor. He would be better for it if he did involve her, and he could have pitched this idea. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, he wouldn't have looked like an idiot. He would have had a different idea that he could have pitched that they would have loved. But he's, like, so desperate to try and cling on to this kind of masculine idea of he's the breadwinner and she's the housewife.
Yeah.
That he's doing himself a disservice.
Yeah, he really is.
And, like, for me, what really stood out to me in this scene when he was being, like I said, he was being really condescending is, can he really not see how unhappy she is? Like, can he really not see that this is not what she wants?
She's literally saying, like, in every episode, how much she used to be the one that people competed with, how she used to run 80 people, like, as teams and stuff, and how she's struggling and how she every day doesn't have time to wash her face and blah, blah, blah. Like, she's saying all of this to him every episode. He just, like, makes light of it every time. He makes a joke about it every time and doesn't, like, do anything.
Because he felt threatened by her in the professional setting. So his thing was, let's take her out of the professional setting, leave her at home and make her look after the kids.
But, like, honestly, if one of them wanted to be a stay-at-home parent and she was earning more than him, it should have been him.
I agree.
Like, why not?
Exactly. I fully agree with
that. Because also he was the one that wanted a stay-at-home parent.
Yeah. He specifically said he wanted a stay-at-home mum. Kids do better with stay-at-home mums anyway.
Yeah. Well, because it was his idea to have a stay-at-home parent. He's the one that's earning less money. She's the one that loves work. Like, to me, all of that things put together equals, why didn't he stay at home?
Because he doesn't want that to cramp his lifestyle. He wants the traditional thing of a housewife who takes care of everything in the house. He walks home, dinner's on the table, and he goes to work and doesn't have to be a parent.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he wants. Yeah, he annoys me too.
I guess to try and deal with this, Lynette, and she's trying to detox from the meds too, so this is like the start of the next episode. She's trying to she doesn't have much of the medication left. She's trying to kind of detox. She's trying to focus and, you know, come back to herself. So she decides to get acupuncture.
Yeah.
And she's got a lady over at her house. And the whole time it is not at all restful. Like, her kids are screaming in the background. Literally Parker drags in a pot plant from somewhere to say something. And she's like, leave the freaking pot plant alone. Like, it's chaos. She can't even do this acupuncture thing. And she asks the acupuncture lady, if she can give her something. And she can't prescribe anything. She's not a doctor. But she gives her a powerful herbal remedy that's supposedly going to help her sleep.
Yeah. It looks like mushrooms, like magic mushrooms.
Yeah. And then she drinks the tea. She's getting ready to have a little nana nap. But she forgot that there was a scouts meeting on today, and like literally a million kids storms into her house.
Yeah.
And she's supposed to be looking after these kids, but she's kind of falling asleep trying to teach them knots, and she's getting the knots all wrong. And she's like, there, and you pull it into a knot, and then the, like, rope comes out completely unknotted.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess the next thing that kind of happens to Lynette is she's fighting with Tom. The kids are running amok. He's about to go off somewhere, and she's about to be stuck with being, you know, a single parent again with her four kids.
Yeah.
And she's literally just like losing her shit. And as she's going through this, she sees Mary Alice Young, like a vision of Mary Alice Young through her window.
Mm.
And Mary Alice Young is literally handing her a gun. Like, this is how bad Lynette is feeling at the moment. Like, she's at her breaking point. And she realized that she was, she kind of had fallen asleep, and she wakes up and the kids are running amok, and they're breaking stuff, and she freaks out about this kind of, I guess, thought that she's had.
Yeah.
She doesn't know what to do with it. So she does a pretty, I feel like, smart thing, except maybe leaving them with Susan, would have left them with Brie instead. But she runs outside, she sees Susan, and she just says, I can't deal with this right now. Just please take my kids. And she leaves all of her kids with Susan, and she runs off. She just leaves. She goes off to have like a bit of peace and time to think. And so it seems like Lynette goes and gets Brie. They leave all these messy kids with a 15-year-old Danielle. Sorry. Oh, yeah, yeah. So Susan goes to get Brie, and they leave all of her kids that are causing Lynette to have a breakdown. They leave them with a 15-year-old.
Yeah, so I know.
With Danielle.
That's so crazy.
And they're like, while they're driving over there, they're like, do you reckon Danielle's all right with the kids? And they're like, yeah, yeah, she's fine, she's fine.
Yeah.
So they go to find Lynette, and they sense that something's really wrong. So they see her sitting on the football field or whatever, some sporting field. I don't know enough sports to know what kind of field it was, but some field. And she's sitting there. Enfield. She's sitting there on an Enfield. And she's kind of sitting with her empty bottle there, the empty pill bottle.
Yeah.
This is one of the scenes that I really liked from these episodes, where Lynette's telling Brie and Susan about her addiction. She's telling them that she's like really struggling. She says that she's sorry for her kids because they've got her as a mother, and she doesn't know how everybody else does it. And, you know, like the support that she gets back from her friends and them saying like, you're not alone, we've all gone through it. I really like that scene. I also liked how Susan has this tendency to like break the ice by like saying something like, so you got addicted to your kid's ADD medication.
It happens.
Yeah. It was kind of like, it reminded me of the scene at the dinner party where she's like, so you're at couples therapy. It happens.
I know. Yeah. One thing I will say this about Susan is she does always like try and make her friends feel better in that way.
Yeah. She does. But yeah, so what Brie and Susan end up telling Lynette is that, you know, they had really hard times when they were raising their kids too, and they felt helpless and alone at times as well. And Lynette says that, you know, why didn't you tell me this? Why don't we talk about this stuff? We need to talk about this stuff.
Mm.
And I really agree. I think we do need to talk about this stuff.
Agreed.
Agreed. I'll tell you guys exactly how it is. Don't do it. Don't have kids.
Yeah,
we'll just share mine.
Yeah, because for example, right, you know how hard it is to raise kids. How hard is it when you're struggling and everyone else is pretending it's a cakewalk?
That's why I stopped using social media. Like, to be honest with you, that's exactly the reason why I stopped using social media, because everyone makes it look like there's nothing wrong with their lives.
Mm.
And I just got sick of it. Like, I can't be the only one out of all these people in the world that are struggling to keep up with their kids and work and the house and their husbands and whatever. No. Like, I can't
be. But this is exactly the danger of social media. It's so curated. Like, everyone always puts their best selves forward, which is normal, right? It's human nature. No one goes out there and says, oh, I'm really struggling, I'm having a shit day.
Yeah.
But it makes everybody else feel like they're alone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it alienates the people.
And it's not just, like, limited to, like, having kids or anything like that either, because, like, I feel like that all the time when I see, like, those people who are like, oh, my 5 to 9 after my 9 to 5, and they're just like, you know, they've made themselves a cute dinner, they've worked out, they've done this, they've done that, and they haven't, like, watched TV, they haven't had any time for themselves, and they seem very, like, content to just, like, be constantly going and just working around the fact that they have to work when I'm constantly in misery.
Like, and the reality is they did that one day that week.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the reality is their kitchens aren't that clean. They just put all the dirt off camera.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Anyway, Lynette's going through it and her friends are really supporting her and we love to see it.
Yeah. And I guess at the end of the episode, we kind of see when they're doing that kind of summary of what everyone's up to, we see that Lynette is like coming to terms with not being perfect. Also, she's like learning how to deal with her addiction and stuff. But what she does is she vows to do better next time and she prays for forgiveness. And Mary Alice Young visits her again in a dream this time, and it's a much happier visit. So
yeah, she doesn't hand her a gun and say, kill yourself this time.
Yeah. So Lynette's looking like she's becoming in a better place at the end of this episode.
Yeah. Good. She deserves it.
Yeah. So Gabby's upstairs in her room talking on the phone to John, who's downstairs by his car, working in their garden, basically. And Mama Solix is on the terrace. Gabby decides to give John a phone call, but Mama Solix knows that something's up, so she's a little bit sus about the phone call. John said to Gabby that he's going to go on a date with Danielle and he wants to cool things off with her, so she becomes, like, insanely jealous of this 15-year-old girl, which is ridiculous. You think she'd know better as a grown-ass woman that, you know, John is taking the right step in the right direction and should just be going along with it. But no.
Well, she's a grown-ass woman. She shouldn't be sleeping with a 16-year-old. She clearly doesn't know better.
True.
Exactly.
One day when Gabby's out for a run, she's running past, coincidentally, Danielle, and she doubles back to talk to her.
Just before that, quickly, I wanted to mention how Mama Solis looks at this phone call, sneaks inside while Gabby's in the shower and calls John from Gabby's phone. And he answers the phone with, yeah, and he answers the phone with, don't even try and make it up to me if I'm talking dirty right now.
Yeah.
Like,
and all of Mama Solisa's suspicions are confirmed.
Exactly. Like, what a way to answer the phone.
She's literally a better detective than half of the Rosewood police.
I know. Juanita Solis for Rosewood PD.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, so she goes for a run. She finds Danielle, doubles back, and offers her a sponsorship for the Perchik Academy in New York, I want to say.
Yep.
It's a modeling gig, and she wants to sponsor Danielle because she's always wanted to be a model. And with that, she walks away. I think, like, she's planning to get Danielle away from John for the summer at least.
Yeah.
Like, she hasn't, like, this is where it got shitty for me, because Gabby and Bree are friends. Bree, in a fit of jealousy, can't do this. Like, she can't just say to someone's 15-year-old, hey, do you want to go to New York for the summer? I'll pay for it. Like, I'm going to sponsor you without talking to your best friend.
Yeah.
Well, and that's exactly why Bree comes yelling at her and is like, did you tell Danielle you would send her to New York? And she's like, don't you want her to be happy? And Bree's like, no. Like,
I know. I don't. But also, like, a couple of episodes ago, Gabby had this epiphany that she realized that John was falling in love with her, like, when he got her the perfect rose. Shouldn't she be worried about that? Like, isn't she worried that she's stringing him along and she's, you know, he's a young kid. He's not an adult.
I think she's developed feelings for John.
I don't know.
I don't feel like she has.
I think for her, it's just a physical attraction. I don't think she has.
I think for her, it's just the excitement of doing something she shouldn't be doing. I don't even know if it's a physical attraction.
Yeah. I don't think – I wouldn't say that she loves John.
No. So John overhears this. John overhears what Bree said to Gabby, and he's like, basically, like, F you. I quit being your gardener. I quit being your – boy toy, whatever. And she's just like, okay, okay, that's fine. Like, sweetie, let's just like hook up one more time for closure. And yeah. Carlos is going to this event and he's like, okay, but we're still broken up after.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
And Mama Solis overhears her plan.
Yeah, because she's right next to her. Next thing you know, Gabby is like faking some cramps. She's like, oh, my tummy hurts. And I can't go to this event with you, Carlos. And Juanita's like, it's fine. Like, just let her stay home. Let her feel better. I'll come with you. And within 10 seconds of everyone leaving, Gabby is up. And, you know, we cut to the next scene where Gabby and John have been like railing for closure. And she's literally on top of him when Juanita takes a cab home, walks in and sneaks a photo of them. And yeah. My God.
Oh, so a disposable camera.
Of course. What else? What else? And John is like panicking. He's like trying to get dressed and follow her. And meanwhile, Gabby's just like, okay, this is over, and starts packing a bag. Yeah. She's like, okay, this is, I'm done now. I have to leave. But tragedy strikes when John is like running down after the stairs, following after her, trying to get the camera. And she literally beats him up and then runs into the street. So when
Mama Solis can stand her own.
She really can, because she beats up this physically fit 16-year-old boy who's like double her height easily. And, you know, she runs into the streets, but she does get hit by a car that speeds off quickly. And Gabby comes down quickly and is like, John, you leave. You were never here. I'm going to handle this. And she takes the camera. So she's not that concerned. She tells the taxi driver to call the, like, call 911. But ultimately, she's not that concerned, it seems. She's very happy that she has taken the camera.
Yeah. And we do see that it was Andrew driving the car, Bree's son. So we'll get to that. Yeah, we'll get to that in Bree's timeline, but we do know who the culprit is.
So in the next episode, we see that Mama Solis is still in a coma and Carlos is like beside himself with grief. And Gabby's a little bit too happy and she's making it known. Like, okay, we know that she's happy that Mama Solis is in a coma, but like she shouldn't make it known to everyone else, I don't think. Yeah. Like, she's very upbeat for someone whose mother-in-law is in a coma.
And I guess, like, speaking of the guilt for this episode, we see John's guilt really coming through in this scene because he comes over and he brings flowers and he says sorry. And when Carlos goes to pray, he's going to go to the chapel to pray, he asks Gabby if she wants to join and she's like, no. But John's like, oh, do you mind if I come with you? So I think he's really struggling with the guilt of what's happened to Mama Solis. And Gabby is feeling so unguilty, in fact, that she definitely does not want to sponge bath Mama Solis.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're at home now. And Bree and her kids come to – Bree, Rex, and their kids come to visit the Solises and give them – it's a little bit of an awkward transaction because it's not trying to give them comfort. It's trying to figure out – what to do next because their son is the one that ran the grandma
it's
over.
A bit of a two for one, isn't it? They're over there to like, you know, give comfort, but they're also trying to find out if they know who did it.
Yeah. So they're sort of fishing for information when Carlos sort of lets spill that they're about to have kids that they haven't spoken about.
Yeah, and it sounds like they specifically spoke about not having kids, in fact, and he's just bringing this on Gabby now.
And then she goes to talk to John about everything. And he says that he's feeling guilty. And he told the pastor everything in a confession. And she's semi-freaking out now because, like, the pastor now knows all of their deep, dark, dirty secrets.
Yeah, including the thing behind the truck stop.
Yeah. And wouldn't you know, while she's there sitting with her mother-in-law, Mama Solis, on her coma bed, the pastor comes in and she starts asking him questions about, do you know, don't judge, whatever. And he tells her that, you know, she can confess and her sins will be repented, but not to waste too much time. She's like, well, what if I wait until I'm 75 and repent then?
Yeah, because she eats well and does yoga.
Yeah, she's literally finding loopholes. She's like, I'm a hoe around now and I'll repent later.
Yeah, but you can see in this thing where she's telling him to like not judge her, how guilty she felt for what's going on.
Not guilty enough to stop, apparently.
Yeah.
She felt too guilty about going to hell. And she also says that she doesn't want to be a good person. She just wants to be happy.
Yes.
So again, she's kind of
struggling with that self-centeredness of wanting to be happy. But, like, you can leave and get a job and be with someone you like. Like,
but then she won't be happy because she'll be poor.
Yeah.
Literally, people will be like, why are you poor?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that is all that happens to Gabby. And what to Bree?
It's going to be Bree. So Bree, first of all, sadly has her beautiful lawn ruined by Martha Huber because she drags a man who's had a literal heart attack onto her yard in a fit of jealousy over her hydrangeas.
Yeah.
This isn't really pertinent to the storyline or anything. I just think that, like, it's amazing and needed to be spoken about.
Yeah.
Yeah. But to be fair with Huber, he wasn't dead. He was almost dead, okay?
Yeah, exactly. He just had a heart attack, just a little one. But the first thing we see is Rex and Bree are called into the school because Andrew has decided he's going to shove a kid into a locker and break their nose, basically. And the principal's saying, like, oh, you know, he may be expelled. And Bree is like, oh, good. Like, whatever, like, you think is right, we believe you because that's not okay. And Rex is there, like, making excuses for his son, being like, oh, well, our marriage sucks. That's why he's acting out. And Bree's like, our marriage has nothing to do with this, and also it doesn't suck. Like, he deserves to be punished. He broke someone's nose. Like, he can't just get off scot-free. And they're just, having it out, basically, in this principal's office, and the principal's just watching this happen. And eventually Rex says that he's served her papers. They're going to be with her later today, and they're going to get divorced.
Yeah, like, completely just throws the curveball.
Yeah. Because my question here is, like, we know that their marriage has been kind of deteriorating over a period of time. But at the end of the last episode, he literally randomly called Bree and was like, let's have dinner. And she dropped everything and ran. And then that's when, what's his name? Zach did the Christmas thing at her house.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, what is going on, Rex?
Yeah, I don't know.
He's giving mixed signals.
He is. Because also he won't tell her what he wants, like, sexually either. And so now I think he's just, like, cutting his losses.
The other thing I didn't like about this scene was Rex, like, making excuses for
Andrew,
like you said, but also he kind of made a comment about, oh, you're going to ruin his future over a little roughhousing. What about the lives and futures of the other people that your son is ruining with his roughhousing?
Exactly. He's making excuses like boys will be boys, but like, no, teach your son how to like take accountability for his own actions. If it ruins his life, that's on him.
Exactly.
How would Rex feel if his son's nose was broken and someone's like, oh, it's okay because we're having a divorce?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so we also
make excuses for your kid.
And we also see Rex finally deciding to talk to his own kids when they sit down to have the divorce. So he hasn't left all of the parenting up to Bree this time.
Not this time.
But Andrew immediately is like, I want to live with Dad. And Danielle's like, I don't care as long as I have my own bathroom.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess Bree's a little bit hurt by this. But this is where their kind of competing starts. So Rex comes home and he immediately is like buying shit for the kids. So he's bought Andrew a car and he's also paying to send Danielle to the modeling academy. And Bree is like furious because she doesn't want to spoil these kids right now.
Yeah, especially after Andrew has just, like, pushed someone in a locker and he's getting a car.
Yeah.
Like, as a reward.
Just a car, like a convertible.
Well, we do later find out that it was kind of a bribe from Rex to say, I'll get you a car if you live with your mother.
Yeah. Well, I don't even think it was that. I think he just wanted to win the parenting award, but he doesn't want the kids. So, because the go live with your mother thing happens after. Because he just assumes now that his dad's the best. He tries to get away from Bree and go live with his dad. Because Bree also says, well, you can only keep the car if you plan on not living here, basically. She goes and changes locks and stuff. And he's like, fine, I'll go live with Dad. And then he goes to live with Dad. And Rex is like, I can't really have kids right now. That's going to complicate my life a little bit. I need to focus on me.
I know.
Yeah.
Literally.
And, just sends him away.
But when he's going away, he calls his friend and he's like, Heath or whatever it is, do you still have those fake IDs? Yeah, I have to kiss my mum's ass right now. I'm not going to do it sober. Danielle caves really easily, though. She's like, yeah, cool. I'll stay living with mum and have a roof over my head so I don't model. And yeah. she goes in. Andrew's like, F this, I'm going to go live with my mum. My dad, sorry. And Bree's like, yeah, don't give back your car. You're going to need to sleep in it.
Like, yeah, literally.
So Bree is just like slaying parenting. She's excellent.
When Bree said that, though, do you think that she knew that Rex wasn't going to accept them?
Probably. Oh, 100%. Yeah, I feel like 100%.
Because she knows the man she married. He's lazy. He doesn't care. He doesn't take care of the kids. He's never taken accountability before. Why would he start now?
Mm.
Anyway, Andrew does get drunk. So after the hit and run, Bree comes running into the house and is like, oh, Andrew, thank God you're here. Like, you're home. There's been a terrible accident. And he's just crying and he's staring at her. And Bree's starting to realize what happens when he's like, mama. Like, suddenly he needs his mum again, even though he
yeah.
was out 10 seconds ago.
Yeah.
But then we go to the next episode and Bree's sort of like looking at her Bible, talking about how she spent most of her life feeling bad, basically, thinking about this, sorry. So she says to her family, we need to get rid of that car. We can't sell it because we might link it to us. We need to make it seem like it's stolen. So we'll drive it to the bad part of town and we'll leave it there with the keys in the ignition. Someone will steal it and then we'll either get insurance money or the car won't be in our possession if it's found. So
can I just say what a genius she is, though? What a strategy.
She is. Can I just... Before we start, like, delving into this, can we talk about how, like, this must have been, like, very traumatic for Bree? Like,
yes.
having lost her own mother the same way.
Yes.
And then now having to clean up the mess for her son.
Yeah. 100%.
Exactly. And then the exact same thing as before. She's scrubbing the streets trying to get it clean for someone else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, this would have been terrible for her. You're right.
That is a really good point.
And the fact that she's able to, like, swallow her own pain, her own... I don't know, anger towards this situation and try and help her son because it's her kid. Like, she just rallied.
Yeah,
like, she when did. Rex was sat there with his head in his hands, like, not knowing what to do, she rallied. She was there. She's like, yep, this is what we're going to do. We're not going to speak a word of it to anyone. You know, boom, boom, boom. Here's the plan. Get on with it.
Yeah.
And I think Rex needs to appreciate her a whole lot more.
He definitely does. So does her kids.
Yeah.
She's literally like, I'm not going to let Andrew spend the rest of his life in jail. And, Andrew acts like a brat the rest of this time. He's just kind of like, yeah. oh, I could go live in Canada with the moose. Like, that's yeah. not a plan, bitch. Anyway, so yes. So Bree and Rex drive the car to the bad part of town like they planned, leaves the keys in the ignition, and almost like instantly someone steals the car while they're reminiscing about like how their kids turned out. And Bree's like, I'll still love them no matter what happened, but this isn't exactly what like my plan was, whatever.
And she wants to get across to Andrew the seriousness of what he's done.
Yes.
But she's like, what even is the appropriate punishment for you just murdered someone and we covered for you though?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well, okay. Question open to the floor. How would you guys punish your kid for hitting someone and running? Say doesn't think this is a crime if you're scared, so it's fine.
Well, then they're off scot-free.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, okay, so if I emphasize with Bree and I'm like, I don't want my kid to obviously go to jail for the rest of their life, I reckon I'd make them do some sort of like humanitarian work, some volunteering, some,
yeah.
something to contribute to society, to kind of repent in a way.
Mate, I would send my kid to go give that lady a sponge bath. Like, you yeah. cause this, you're going to be looking after this lady until she's back up on her feet. Like, get your head out your ass.
Yeah, that's a better punishment. Well, not even a punishment, you know, makes him front up to what they've done
yeah.
in a way.
Yeah.
Because if you're not there and you're not seeing it, it's like easy to underplay it, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But
like, if it's in your face, like this lady who was full of life and about to catch Gabby out in her affair.
Like, you know, driving. She had things to do. Literally shot down in her peak.
She had things to do. You better go look after her. Like, you better go be there, you know, help the doctors or whatever. Just stay there. Hold vigil by her bedside. Just stare at
yeah.
this lady's poor, unmoving body until you feel so bad about what you did. You're never going to do it again.
Yeah, and also, yeah. like, having to deal with the grieving family around her,
seeing
the real-life impact that you've had on someone.
Like, it's not about just taking her kids to go see Gabby and Carlos and them bickering. Like, go see what Carlos is actually feeling, like, while he's crying. While
I feel he's like praying. That visit wasn't for Andrew's benefit, though. I feel like it was for them to find out what's going on and see if he's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so as well. But I think, yeah, after it, like, Bree did expect Andrew to be feeling bad, to be struggling with guilt, to be whatever, but He just doesn't. So, yeah. Like, immediately after they visited and they didn't get any information, Andrew was kind of like, oh, yeah, well, it looks like I'm getting off scot-free.
He says, whatever, I'm off the hook, and high fives Danielle.
Yeah. And then, like, I think Bree is like, no, he must be struggling but not willing to say it. So she kind of approaches him and is like, do you want to see a shrink? I understand if you're having kind of feelings and you should talk to somebody.
If you're worried or ashamed, like, that's normal. Like, but we need to make sure you're okay as well, kind of a thing.
Yeah, but Andrew's like, nah, I'm all good. Like, I have no feelings about this.
Yeah.
And she's like, she's really shocked by this. And she's like, I just want to know that I haven't raised a monster. And he's like, okay, well, I do feel bad that she's hurt, but I feel worse for myself. She's an old lady. She's lived her life. And now I have to bike to work or to school or whatever he said.
Yeah, to school.
And like, he just had absolutely no guilt or remorse at all. And he was just feeling sorry for himself because he didn't have a car anymore.
Yes, like, that's exactly how
disconnected and selfish that he is. So I think, like, Bree's a little bit scared about how her son's turning out too.
Yeah, and he gets worse as well because she's like, give me one good reason why I shouldn't go to the police, Andrew. And he's like, well, because you're my mother and that would make you the monster if you did that.
I know. So he's emotionally manipulative too on top of all of that.
Exactly. Like, actually, Andrew's the biggest scumbag. Rex is probably going to make an excuse about this too, like, oh, it's because of our divorce.
Yeah, exactly. You know how, like, every child of divorce goes and kills someone immediately? You know that, right?
That's what we did, right?
Yeah. That's a very, very well-known statistic.
Who did you guys kill?
I'm not admitting
I don't want to go into it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't want to go into it.
Because I think I got the assignments wrong and I just killed my own soul.
But something I forgot to mention, I just wanted to quickly see if you guys noticed this. When Andrew gets the car and him and Danielle hop in to go for a drive, did you guys notice anything weird about that scene?
Yes, how Danielle tried to get in and she couldn't.
Yeah, besides that, it is about Danielle. Did you notice something else?
No.
She's only wearing one shoe.
Is she actually?
Yeah, she is. And because I was doing some, like, I Googled what the name of the episode was to put it up first, and I saw this, like, little fun fact come up. So I went back and looked at it again, and she's definitely only wearing one shoe, and then later on she's wearing two, and, like, there's no explanation.
That's so funny. They must have thought that was out of shot or something when they filmed it.
Maybe, but, like, I don't know. Like, maybe they just, like, she just quickly moved on and just thought no one would notice, but it was funny.
That's all that we have in Bree's timeline.
She'll move on to Mary Alice Young.
And I guess we kind of start with all of the Wisteria Lane is our show. The Wisteria Lane women have a book club, which we're seeing for the first time. And it goes beyond just the kind of four housewives that we know. There's a few other housewives in the book club as well. But apparently they've lost their interest in fiction since Mary Alice Young died. So they're all kind of getting a bit like, you know, they're a bit all over the place. They're meant to be covering Madame Bovary, but Gabby's only watched a movie. Lynette thinks she's inspired. Somebody else is like, I don't think that's the message you're meant to get out of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not going well. And I don't even know why the housewives decide to go ahead with this book club because they're totally not into it. And in fact, Bree makes an excuse to kick them all out of the kitchen so that the main housewives can have a debrief about what's going on with Mary Alice Young's secrets and the Dana thing that they found out. So
can I just say how funny that was, though, when Bree's like, can you and you come just help me with the snacks in the kitchen? And then she's like, everyone's like, yeah, they go in. And she just shuts the door and I'm like, I'll be right there.
I know. Why bother having a book club meeting at this point?
Like, I know.
Just the four of you meet.
I know.
No go.
Yeah.
They talk about, like, Julie sneaking in and everything that happened to Dana, and they're just, like, summarizing what we already know, basically, that we've seen with Susan's timeline, and nothing new happens there. But we do see Paul Young and the PI that he had hired. He's finding out who sold this mysterious guilty paper. He found out that it's sold locally and based on, like, the post stamp and everything, it's someone nearby, and some soccer mum wants, like, poisoned a bunch of kids to make sure their kid was, like, the top of their class or something ridiculous, like some random story.
Yeah, the PI says sometimes evil drives a minivan. So yeah. I think it's someone that likely knew Mary Alice.
Yeah, someone local. And so Paul is selling his house, and Edie's over because she's the only real estate agent in this town. She says, you know, you have to disclose that Mary Alice killed herself here, and he's like, is there any way we can avoid it? And she's like, yeah, you can say she shot herself here and then dragged herself out back to die.
Yeah. She's so subtle.
She is. And Edie goes to leave, and she leaves her notebook, and Paul notices matching purple paper in it.
Yeah.
So he does the PI's job for him and is like, hey, I found the owner of the purple paper. Here you go. And he's like, I lived a good life. I was proud of my life. I went to church. Life was good. People were nice, blah, 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 blah. And he basically says, the PI says to him, 5K to hurt Edie and 10K to make sure she never comes back.
And can I say that's crazy cheap?
I know.
That's what I was going to say.
That is like, crazy cheap. Like,
selling your soul for $10,000? No, thank you.
I know. I don't know. If I would expect it to be hundreds of thousands of dollars, not 10,000. That's ridiculously cheap.
I would say like about $50,000 sounds about right.
I feel like I'd have a hard time saying no just because I love a bargain.
Yeah, literally. You're like, let me find someone for you to kill.
Yeah, let me think who I can kill because I do not want to pass up on this bargain. Like, that's crazy.
But is that like, I don't know, what was inflation like in 2007?
Yeah, but I still think, like, even given accounting for inflation, I don't think $10,000 in 2007 was enough money to
warrant
killing someone.
Yeah. I would expect hundreds of thousands. Yeah. At least 100K.
He has to stay competitive in his business, okay? Like, supply and demand. The economy is oversaturated by killers.
No, I don't think it is. That's what I was about to say. Exactly. I don't think it's like a common good.
It is a common good, clearly.
Paul initially decides that he's going to, obviously, he likes a bargain too. He's one of us. So he says that he wants to kill Edie. He wants her to pay. But when the PI comes over to meet Edie.
So the PI actually meets Edie at the bar, at the Dude Ranch bar, whatever it was.
Yeah, that's where he meets her, makes contact.
Yeah.
But then he tries to meet her later on.
He's put himself
in the role of like a real estate developer.
Yeah.
So he's lured Edie out to the middle of the woods under the pretenses of he's going to be building something there, and she's giving him ideas for a strip mall.
Yeah, because she ran the numbers, and it's literally like 1 + 1 = 2 on a purple piece of paper.
Yeah.
But before she does meet him, though, she has a falling out with Martha over $40.
Yeah, I know.
Martha and Edie are having a fight about $40 that Edie's accusing Martha of stealing from her purse, which we find out that she did steal. But also, like, Edie, she's kind of putting you up when you don't have anywhere to live. Just, like, maybe let her keep the $40.
Yeah, but like, you don't want someone going through your stuff and taking your money. Be like, okay, I'll give you the $40, but stop going through my stuff, please.
Yeah, I guess so. That's true. But, yeah, like, but Martha's laying it on her, like, she accuses her of being a slut, and then Edie's like, I have a healthy sex life. And she's like, healthy? I'm going to have to burn every sheet you touched.
And like, she's like, you big old fatty, you eat all of my fat-free peach yogurts.
Yeah.
I didn't just walk out of the fridge, Edie.
Yeah, they just literally have a falling out over this $40, and Edie decides that she's leaving that day. She's not going to live with Mrs. Huber anymore. And then that's when she meets the guy on the block.
Yes, that's right.
And he takes his gun out. And he's, you can see that he's kind of going there with that intention of killing Edie.
In the middle of the day, in broad daylight, in the open field, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. He's the best killer. I don't know why he charges $10,000. He should charge more because he's immediately going to jail.
He's doing it for the experience, you know?
But yeah, so like Artem said, Edie's showing him her working out on the guilty purple paper, and he's like, yes, got her. And then she mentions that the paper is stolen, and she says it's Mrs. Huber's. And he's like, hold on a minute. Is it possible that there's more than one person in this neighborhood that has purple paper?
I know. This is the kind of quick thinking that has him where he is today.
Exactly. Because he's like, this is something I didn't think of, and now it's making me think again. And,
yeah. But this guy's also like, in addition to driving a bargain, he also is really good at transferring. So he goes back to Paul and he's like, so I think it might have been Mrs. Huber because she stole this paper, right? But and I don't do refunds, but we can transfer your murder to a different person if you would like.
Exactly. Exactly. I'll do an exchange, but you're not getting a refund.
Exactly.
But Paul changes his mind. He's like, I don't think it's what Mary Alice Young would have wanted for me to do, and what she would have wanted is answers. So he decides to forego his $10,000 and he goes to talk to Mrs. Huber himself.
So after Paul's little meeting with his hired PI / contract killer, he decides to go find out more about why Huber did what she did. And he uses her groceries as an excuse to get into her house. So she's sort of saying no to him, but he's sort of like forcing himself into her house with her groceries anyway. So he gets in and they begin to talk, and this is where I got confused. Was she saying to him that she didn't have a reason for doing this? Like, was she just saying that she just sent out a random note?
No. So I think she was just trying to bribe, like blackmail her. She wasn't expecting her to go kill herself because, yeah, she said her idiot husband died and left her with a worthless pension. And we know from the last few episodes as well that she's actually really been suffering, like struggling
with having money problems. Yeah,
hence why she needed the $40.
That's why she needed the $40. So she's been like struggling for a long time, and then when she found out something about Mary Alice Young, she decided to use that to her advantage. But she is adamant that she's also another person who doesn't feel guilty for their actions, because she says to Paul that she didn't kill herself because of the note I wrote; it's because of what she did to that poor baby.
Yeah.
So we know that there's something going on with this baby, because earlier in the episode, which we forgot to mention, Susan tells the other housewives about the Dana blanket as well, and that they found a baby blanket and it says Dana on it. And the conclusion I thought was funny, because I think it was Susan was like, oh, so Dana was a baby.
I knew you would say that.
Weren't we all? Like, weren't we all a baby at some point? You don't know that she didn't grow out of that baby blanket. Like, what a weird assumption.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I feel like it was Martha that confirms to us that maybe this was a person that, you know, was a baby. And Mary
Alice Young. That didn't get to not be a baby.
That didn't get to not be a baby, possibly, because Mary Alice Young did something to a baby.
Paul, after he's done talking about how Mary Alice couldn't even hurt a fly, yeah, is like, but I can though. and whips out the blender that was actually Mary Alice's that Huber stole when she died.
The day of her death.
And used it to bash her head in. Like, yeah, this escalated so quickly.
Yeah.
He is crazy.
He is justice, I guess.
Yeah. I just thought it was, like, very full circle for him to use his very own blender. Like,
I don't think he knew it was his blender.
I don't think he did either. No.
And then he rolled her up in a rug, right?
Yes, he did.
But you know what? At least now she's not having money problems. So
that's true.
There's a silver lining everywhere.
That's so true. So true. At least she's not poor anymore.
Yeah, that's all right.
But also, like, mate, that house is way too big for one person anyway. If you're having money problems, sell your house and move somewhere smaller.
Literally, exactly. Cool. And that's all we have for the episodes, right?
Yeah.
So who has a worst sister story?
So you guys remember how in the last episode I tried out a new massage place?
Yeah.
So I also mentioned that when I got there, I really liked it because I had a glass of water and some chocolates ready to eat.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this place is so nice. So my shoulder was still sore, so I decided to go back to the place. And at first I was like, oh, this is so weird. Like, there's no chocolates or water out. Like, how did they go down on their service level already since last week? But I didn't think much of it. And I sat down in an empty chair and just waited my turn. I was earlier there than I was last time. And then I realized as the other people were finishing up and they were coming out, they were putting out the chocolates and the water for the people that were coming out. So the last week when I was there, I ate someone else's chocolates.
Oops.
Oh, my God. Oops. So, yeah. So that's something I learned about how that place works. They give you your chocolate and your water after your massage.
Can't believe you stole someone's chocolates.
I know. Literally, you should have seen my face as it dawned on me. I was just sitting there and I saw the person come out and then give them the water and the chocolate. And I was like, oh, no. I see what's happened here.
Okay, so thanks for listening in, guys. That was our take on Desperate Housewives Season 1, Episode 7 and 8. Tune in next week for another episode of Shadeswood. If you have anything that you want us to know about or you want to ask us some questions or topics to talk about for next time, please get in contact with us via Facebook, Instagram, Reddit and TikTok, which is at Worst Sister Shire. Or you can get in touch with us on Twitter, which is at Sister Worst.
Or as it's now called, X.
Yeah, that's X. Right.
Yeah, Twitter's been rebranded.
Well, X, formerly known as Twitter, which is at Sister Worst, or our email address, which is worstsistershire@gmail.com. Do you guys want to wrap up with a huddy bum?
Sounds good.
Let's do it.
All right. 1, 2, 3.
Huddy bum. That was so good.